There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 1207 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile. Lots to do on today's show. Well, we got 1 hour of Midday Mobile, then Cam Marston with What's Working Special Edition starting at 1 o'clock today. Talk more about that coming up in just a little bit. Also, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran joins us in the second half of this hour, but I held out the first half because Governor Ivey just wrapped up a press conference, and it was... Well, I'm going to let you make the call. We'll go through it. She's reiterating some things, talking about a few new things, and dodging like the biggest game of battle ball, dodgeball you ever played on some of the questions that we've asked here on the show of why big box stores get to stay open, smaller stores don't. A lot about timelines. We'll get into it. This is from about an hour ago. Governor Ivey addressing the state and the coronavirus fight. Starts off a little bit here of a discussion of the tornadoes and our states to our west and east that suffered from the tornadoes more than we did here at home and some assistance. And then gets right into talking about the fight against coronavirus and when Alabama may open back up for business.
While in the middle of the COVID-19 virus, certainly we are all concerned about our health, but now many of our friends are also having the extra burden of having to deal with a damaged home or vehicle. And so we all know that you can replace a building, but you can't restore your loved ones. So we are grateful that no lives were lost in our state on Sunday. Our thoughts and prayers continue to be with our neighbors to the east and west, and they've certainly had a lot more deaths than we did, and property damage as well. And I'm offering to Governors Reeves, Kemp, and Edwards our condolences in this time of loss in their states, and also our offer to provide any resources that they would find useful. That's what neighbors do. Neighbors help neighbors. But turning our attention back to the COVID-19 pandemic, I want to give you a more in-depth update on the progress that we are making with our current stay-at-home order, which runs through April 30th. And while I'm personally grateful that so many people appear to be staying at home and taking the order to heart, all indicators suggest that it is working. And I cannot overemphasize enough the importance. In fact, it is imperative that we keep doing what we are doing. Now is not the time to let our guard down and pretend that things are back to normal. While some of the modeling suggests that our efforts have been paying dividends, many around the state are beginning to ask, what are our plans about reopening the economy? And that's the same question that other governors are getting and that President Trump is getting and world leaders are being asked as well. So in these few minutes, allow me to give the people of Alabama an update on our plans to open our economy back. Along with a timeline, in hopes that all things being equal, we can stick to this roadmap. And in all honesty, y'all, we've been working on such a plan for several weeks. As many of you know, I recently asked Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth to get the Small Business Commission, which he chairs, to begin looking for ways where we can restart the economic engine of our state, especially our smaller businesses. And as everyone knows, this is not a simple process, just like flipping on a light switch. But the Lieutenant Governor and this commission have been working to bring forward a set of recommendations that I trust will be valuable and helpful, and I hope to receive their input by this coming Friday. Over the weekend, my office contacted each of the seven members of our congressional delegation to ask that they look at this challenge on a district-by-district basis by setting up their own individual working groups in their respective districts. And y'all, I was pleased, so pleased, that all seven immediately jumped on board to be helpful. As I've said before, Grove Hill is not Gadsden, and Decatur is not the same as Dothan. It's especially true that our economy, that there's many differences, economic differences in our state as there are geographic and regional differences. Our House delegation will have their report back to me on or before April 22nd. As y'all would expect, I'm getting a lot of advice, and I'll admit it's a lot of free advice on what we could do, should do, or must do to get our economy going again. But my staff and I are taking every suggestion serious, and we're looking at it, and we've had some good ones come in already. But I intend to take all of these suggestions and recommendations and ask six members of my coronavirus task force to help my administration begin to vet all of these good ideas. These six individuals will serve on my executive committee, and they will work to put together a thoughtful, well-planned timeline for us to open up the economy. And keep in mind, though, that these recommendations will have to be carefully integrated into the advice that we're receiving from Dr. Harris and our medical team of experts from throughout the state. On or before April the 28th, Dr. Harris and I will review these recommendations so that we can provide an updated plan of action before the current stay-at-home order expires on April 30th. And going forward, we'll hopefully be able to give regular updates on what segments of the economy might be in a position to open, including when and how, while also allowing our businesses, both large and small, ample time to plan for a safe, responsible reopening. This will be a roadmap that will help Alabama begin our road to recovery. As governor, I have the responsibility to look after both the health of our people as well as our economic health. On a conference call yesterday with my Secretary of Labor, I was reminded that we have had more than 264,000 people file for unemployment here in Alabama in just the last 4 weeks. That's in stark contrast to the number of unemployment that was filed a year ago for 12 months of 130,000. We can take both the economic health and well-being of our state seriously, just as we can look after the safety and well-being of our people. We can do both of these things at the same time, and y'all, that's what Together Alabama is all about. That's our task at hand, and I'm confident that we can handle both of these tasks at the same time. Now I'd like to ask Dr. Harris to come forward and give us an update on the pandemic.
I tell you what we'll do. We'll cut right there. We'll come back with Dr. Scott Harris and then some questions from the presser that I've been asking, that the reporters at the 6 foot of separation social distancing press conference did as well. We'll get into those when we return right here on Midday Mobile. Sheriff Sam Cochran joins us around 12:35 and Cam Marston at 1. We'll answer along. FMTalk1065.com. That's the website. More info right there.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
All right, 12:19, FM Talk 1065 at Midday Mobile. Sheriff Sam Cochran joining us here in just about 12-13 minutes. Your chance to ask the sheriff. You got questions for Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Get them in on the text line, 343-0106. Speaking of the text line, and I'm going to go to phone lines too because Gary's holding on. I want to say Uber guy on the text line this morning after the conclusion of Mobile Morning said, I just left Lowe's on Dolphin Street and it's a cluster ... Four dots. I wonder four dots represent there. And I looked down at the screen and our man Gary checking in from Mobile with a Home Depot report. What's going on?
Yeah, Sean, thanks for taking my call. I know you got a filled up schedule today, but yeah, I just came from Home Depot. That son of a gun filled up like a three-day weekend on the first day of spring.
So, wait a second. I thought that the stores were, they could go to 10%, but they're supposed to be at 20% capacity, right? That's the rule. In Mobile, right? It's inside the city limits.
They got people counting there with their clickers at the doors, but I tell you what, that thing was filled up with buggies and carts and people with no masks. It was like a Mardi Gras free-for-all.
So you felt...
at home with nothing to do.
Yeah, I think, you know, people said that this morning, and I think it is. I think people are taking on projects, and they want to go get the stuff to do the project.
Absolutely.
All right, thanks, Gary. Appreciate the update.
All right.
Speaking of that, let me get a cut here from the presser from this one. So Governor Harvey spoke, and then... Scott Harris, Dr. Harris talked. Then they go back to taking some questions here. I want to jump forward for a second here and get to the question about store closures and the governor. Y'all tell me. I'm going to play the clip, and then you can tell me if, like, I was shaking my head at the Dodgers here. I'll just go ahead and play it, and y'all make the call.
Can you explain your reasoning behind why big box stores can stay open when there are other stores selling similar items that say they can follow those same similar sanitation policies and they have less people? What's the reasoning behind that?
Well, the big box stores have a limitation of how 50% of the fire marshal's occupancy rate, so they're limited to how many can be in the store at any given time. Those may be some of the kinds of recommendations that we come forward to start being able to open up more businesses.
Tom? Let's go back here. Say what? So the question being asked here, once again, why if a company, a smaller business, could follow the same guidelines that they're giving the big box stores, if they could do that, why shouldn't they be allowed to be open like the big box stores are open? Right? So that's the question. And the governor... The questions are hard to hear here.
Those may be some of the kinds of recommendations that we come forward to start being able to open up more businesses. What's your question?
Is it a concern that this policy is creating a system of winners and losers by having various stores open and smaller stores not?
The issue is not who can stay open, who can be closed. The issue is keeping people separated and apart and limited your contact with people. So that's the initiative. Certainly we can make improvements as we go along, and we'll continue to do so. But at the same time, the focus is on physical distancing.
Yeah, but, okay, let's go back once again. He's asking the governor, does this make winners and losers? If the governor's order here says, you know what, the big box stores could be... I just want an answer. I think it's a fair thing. I don't think it's a rude question. Why, if they can follow the same protocols, do they not get to? And listen, once again, Governor Ivey's response here, or lack thereof.
Certain stores are open and others not. Is that a concern?
What's your question?
Is it a concern that this policy is creating a system of winners and losers by having bigger stores open and smaller stores not?
The issue is not who can stay open, who can be closed. The issue is keeping people open. Separated and apart and limit your contact with people. So that's the initiative. Certainly we can make improvements as we go along, and we'll continue to do so. But at the same time, the focus is on physical distancing and limiting the exposure to groups of people. Todd?
Okay, so I mean, maybe she didn't. Maybe she just didn't understand the question. Maybe that was it. I mean, we just had... On the flip side, we had, you know, Gary calls in, says folks are packed in Home Depot, and Uber guy said they were packed in at Lowe's. They had the protocol, whatever the protocol is, and they're letting 20% in. So what if the small business, you know, small business doesn't mean it's physically small. There's a lot of warehouses that are small businesses that are huge. But wherever it is, if you could live up to the same requirements that they're asking the big box stores to do, which is, I'm sure, it's the, you know, percentage of people in there and the and I'm sure doing the cleaning and disinfecting. If the mom and pop at the local business could do the same thing, why shouldn't they be able to be opened if the other ones are? I don't think. Tell me why that's the, and the governor, my goodness, my lambs, with the Dodges that just went on there. By the way, Ben and others, Ben said, which Capitol bathroom did they hold the pressure in? Listen, the audio is horrible. The governor gets off mic and they got everybody, you know, spread out through the room and they can't get the mics close to them. Yeah, this has been an age. I will cut them some slack right now on audio because the things are, yeah, everybody spread out in that room. But the governor can get on mic, right? And they could have like a boom mic for the reporters, but I get you. And no, somebody suggests I go do, Tony says, I suggest you go hire the, they hire you to do sound for them or something. I don't know. Tony, I've got to fix what's going on with Mobile City Council audio, and then we can graduate up to Montgomery on this. By the way, Ben, the Capitol bathrooms are really, really nice. The ones in the, you get all that Alabama marble, which is some of the most beautiful marble on earth out there. All right, so then, also the question came up about Medicaid expansion, something we've talked about with Todd Stacey on the show a lot, that with all this going on and with federal money going to most likely come pouring in, will the executive branch, Governor Ivey, take this chance when the legislature is not in session to move on a Medicaid expansion?
Mike. Governor, as Dr. Harris just reiterated, the COVID-19 is a lot worse for people with pre-existing conditions like diabetes and so forth, and those tend to be bad in rural areas where there are a lot of poor people. Has this pandemic and the circumstances caused you to more strongly consider expanding Medicaid? I know you previously said all options are on the table, but are you exploring that more strongly because of what's happened here?
Well, certainly we're concerned about the health and welfare of all of our citizens, wherever they may live. But at the same time, it would be irresponsible to think about expanding Medicaid just for the sake of expanding Medicaid without having a complete and honest discussion about the source of stable funding to pay the match, et cetera. It is an option. I'm aware of the interest that's there, but there's a lot of exploring that has to be done on how you pay for it.
Any concrete steps planned on doing that exploring on those? Finding a stable source of funding.
Right now, we're focused on keeping everybody healthy and
Right. Okay. So, which just wants for this play, when the what could be $1.9 billion comes in to save the day again with Alabama's budget, right? Federal money that could come out of the CARES Act that would come to the state. Now, there's municipalities asking how they get their cut. That's a whole other story. But you have $1.9 billion coming into the state. So, yeah, the Fed's paying the lion's share of Medicaid. Will the state turn around and take the money they got from the feds and use that to put in for the state's portion of Medicaid in the expansion? I don't know. I want to play this little clip here, too. Dr. Scott Harris talking about peak demand. This is a question that we've talked about many times. Dalton's kind of walked through what the dates would look like for the peak demand for hospital beds, ER facilities, all that. Here's what he had to say.
Based on the models that you've all seen, when can we expect to see the peak or the flattening of the curve?
You know, Dr. Harris, you may want to speak to that, but I think it's sometime between April 20 and 22.
Yes, ma'am, that's exactly right. We think the sort of peak demand for hospital beds would be around the 20th. For ICU beds would be around the 20th. The peak demand for actual total beds, hospital beds, may be a day or so earlier than that, but certainly within the next 6, 7, 8 days, something like that.
So there you go, next 6, 7, 8 days for peak. And that's one of the things that brings up the discussion of opening back up, right? And while we've talked about it this morning, nationally, that has to be a different story. You have to look at the situation in this state versus that state. Let's do a fair comparison here. In our neck of the woods, Louisiana, they have had it much worse than we have in Louisiana. So you would argue maybe that Alabama might be ready to open back up before Louisiana would be. At the same time, within the state of Alabama, there's places that have a lot more cases. You look at Mobile County, second in the state, only to Jefferson County, which is interesting because Baldwin County, or, you know, our share two neighbors, right? I guess actually you could say Clark County, right there up where the river comes together. You could have Clark, but you know, it's Washington County and Baldwin County, and yes, a little bit of Clark County before anybody corrects. But Mobile County outpacing even per capita the other two counties in number of cases. So you got to say, well, maybe some other county could come online. Would Baldwin County be able to have restrictions lifted before Mobile County? We'll talk about enforcing those restrictions as well. We talked to Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. It's your chance to ask the sheriff. He joins us next. Text line, phone line, open for you at 343-0106, 343-0106. Did y'all feel good about that answer for why the big box stores can be open but the mom and pops can't? But was it even an answer? No wonder I get myself on the bad, naughty list for the governor, I guess. That's, wouldn't be the first governor I've done that with. So, all right, be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along, and it's the second Tuesday of the month when we get to talk to Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, and your chance to ask the sheriff. Hey, Sheriff.
Hey, good afternoon. Afternoon to all you listeners.
Hey, and a lot to talk about here as we go through. From a law enforcement perspective, and I keep reminding folks, y'all don't make the laws, y'all enforce the laws. What's it been like in general, and then maybe in specific with dealing with the state being in a state of emergency, the social distancing rules? It seems like every other day there's some new piece of information coming out of Montgomery.
Well, you know, in these times like this, I always say it brings out the best in people and it brings out the worst in people, but it usually don't bring out the in-between in people. People make some very foolish mistakes, and then others you see just really rise up to the occasion and will shock and surprise you that they're capable of doing what they do. And I see that in workers, employees, and everyday citizens, and of course the health professionals. These are interesting times, but like I say, it brings out a lot of emotions in people.
What are you telling deputies about? I mean, there's no, y'all can't do your job in socially distance. I mean, it's just not possible, right?
It's difficult, but you know, I think the public understands, and for us in the rural areas in the county, we're really not having any major issues from our citizens. They seem to be not, you know, disobeying the law and are reasonable with us. And so, of course, we're stressing all the things of, you know, hygiene and providing our deputies with the, you know, most of them have, or they have the mask and cleaning fluids. And we're looking at getting additional things. And we've had some of our cars cleaned and looking at other ways of doing things. Now, of course, the jail continues to be a challenge, but we're now 72 hours without any spikes in fevers of any of the inmates. We've had a number of corrections officers have had the coronavirus, and several others have had just the antibodies and never got sick from it, never realized they'd even had it. But we're fortunate for that. They're doing a yeoman's job there in the jail, keeping the inmates healthy and you know, free from the coronavirus.
Well, that's one of the worrisome things you talk about, people that have the antibodies and whatever, the 900 folks in public safety that were tested. There were, you know, not quite a few, but there was like 4% or something that had the antibodies that weren't mm-hmm. sick. There was no way to test that ahead of time. I mean, who knows who got it first? Was it an inmate? Was it a corrections officer? But obviously it was in that jail. How do you, now that you know it was there, and so maybe, do you go back and test everybody every week? Do you do a scrub of the jail? How do you keep the people separated? I mean, what do you do? That's jail.
Well, that's right. You can't really keep your social distance in the jail or for the inmate, so you keep the inmates from being infected by it is the best way, but we followed CDC guidelines for jails and have worked in conjunction with the local health department and the experts. And anybody that gets arrested and comes in the jail, of course, we temperature check everybody coming and going. if somebody is arrested and brought into jail, we isolate them for 7 days to make sure they don't come down with a fever or anything, and then we introduce them into the general population.
But they could
when people do have fevers, we segregate them, and if they catch the virus, we further segregate them, and we quarantine them, and eventually we have them get well.
But they could be like these cases we're just talking about, right? Somebody that has the antibodies. One, but we hear cases where people, they're not showing. Maybe they do run a fever. I don't know. But they're saying asymptomatic folks. So you could take somebody to jail who's doesn't seem sick, right, but could be spreading that coronavirus.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess you'd think that sooner or later they would have a little bit of a fever or some kind of a fever within that 7 days is the best practice we know of. You know, and hopefully they'd at least have enough fever that we could determine they may be symptomatic without getting any some of the other signs.
What do you so with those corrections officers that have gotten it? Are they when they do they have to go? I mean, after they finish a treatment, I mean, how long are they out, and how is that a stress on you staff wise for the jail?
It certainly is a stress on us staff wise. When we started doing the antibodies, how we determined some video of them that had it, they show the antibody and then they're immediately swabbed, and that test comes back within a day or so now. It used to be 2 to 3, 4 days. So they would be sent home to quarantine for 14 days and be tested again. Now, if someone has it, we don't know exactly when they got it, so we send them home initially for 7 days, re-swab them to see if they still have it. If they don't have it, then they can come back to work rather than missing a whole 2 weeks. So we've speeded that process up to get them back to work sooner. But it's interesting. I think as we look backwards after this is all over with, were the corrections officers getting it in jail, or were the corrections officers getting it outside of the jail? Because we've had more corrections officers with it than we've had inmates with it.
Well, but and then
kind of like what the head of Spring Hill Memorial, I think, said that they had 16 or 12 employees had it, but not a single one had it that worked in the area where they were treating the patients.
So they
victimized that they may have brought it from home rather than from the hospital.
Yeah, but how do you deal with that, Sheriff? Because, okay, let's say, you know, at ABC Widget Company, right, we say, okay, listen, we're going to shut this thing down. We're closing our doors. Our only central staff are going to be in there. The nature of what you're doing at the jail is new people, unfortunately, coming in all the time.
That's right, and that's why we segregate the new people before we put them in with the existing people, and that at least, you know, it may not identify every single one of them, but it certainly should identify the majority of them if they are carrying it and then later get sick. But we also know that not everybody that's exposed to it, of course, gets it.
That's true. Now let's talk about that outside the jail and back to kind of, you said that you really haven't had issues with people in the county, but, I mean, we're looking at the city of Mobile, inside the city, in your time as police chief, you could obviously look through those lenses. And I've got people that were fired up this morning saying that, you know, I'm my liberties are being stepped on here, that I can't go out and you know, go to this store, or go to that store. I have another set of people are saying people shouldn't leave the home at all. This is, you know, they're endangering everybody. But law enforcement is tasked, like in the city of Mobile, with enforcing that. And whether they agree with it or not, that's the ordinance. I mean, It probably doesn't look good if you got to arrest somebody for going down to the hardware store.
No, that's right. In law enforcement, historically, has to use discretion, and there's a lot of discretion being used at this point in time. And the process is generally along lines about you need to separate, you need to disperse, you know, and most people will. But if they keep coming back and doing it, then eventually you got to take maybe more enforcement. That's why the law enforcement is trying to issue either summonses or tickets, because the last thing we want to do is bring somebody to jail under these conditions. But we've also got to not overreact on some of these things, too. If I've learned one thing in law enforcement over the years, the citizens will only obey what rules and laws that are passed that are reasonable. And of course, time will tell. But and so I think we're drawing a middle-of-the-road thing right now in Mobile County, but we certainly have to not overreact, but we've got to react. And generally in times like this, you usually err on the side of overreaction rather than underreacting.
Right, just joining us, talking to Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. It's your chance to ask the sheriff. I know it wouldn't be you and I talking if we didn't have a question about conceal and carry. So let's see here. Question for the sheriff from Tim. Sheriff Cochran, how long can you expect on a turnaround pistol permit now that we're doing it electronically?
I haven't checked, but I don't think it should be more than a couple of days at the most. And we do allow people now for first-time recipients to go online to our website and apply and receive it through the Internet without having to come in. People can still come by the office, and we have a drop box out front where they can fill out the application, drop it in the box, and we'll complete it and put it in the mail to you shortly.
All right. Just another reason to get a multi-year concealed carry permit, right?
Sure, absolutely. Same amount of work on us, but we don't have to recycle every year.
All right. Okay, I want to make a couple more questions. Well, let me ask, you kind of answered that. So you're not, there's not a curfew in effect for the county. It is just for the city. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So there is not, somebody's asking what they enforce, but y'all aren't enforcing it because it's not the law there. Let's do this. We'll run to the news break. Can you hold on? We'll come back and get a few more questions asked.
Sure.
All right. Coming right back with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. It's your chance to ask the sheriff something we do on the second Tuesday of every month. And if you got a specific question, it could be related to coronavirus enforcement around that. It could be like concealed carry permit questions. We'll have those and we'll get those answered right here. 343-0106. 343-0106. Quick reminder as well. FMTalk1065.com. If you're looking for podcasts of all the 44 hours a week of live local programming we do, you can check them out there. And in addition, you can go grab individual podcasts dealing with COVID-19 local news. They're under their own tab. It says COVID-19 local news on the top row there at FMTalk1065.com. All right, 1245, we'll come right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FMTalk1065.
At 1248, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Continue our conversation with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in just a minute here, because I want to check in with Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry, even though the fine jewelry portion and gifts is online. But we're still doing gold and silver in the real world, right, Angelo?
That is absolutely correct. Yeah, we've been selling those 10-ounce silver bars in stock. We've been selling a lot of 10th-ounce, half-ounce, and 1-ounce gold pieces. So a lot of folks worrying about where things are going to go. They have been getting some safety with some of those precious metals. We've actually had some folks coming in to sell some of their scrap items as well, buying some scrap gold and scrap silver, keeping busy today.
All right. And, yeah, let's talk about the online, which, by the way, what an effort, because tell folks, how many items on your eBay page?
Over 9,000. And that's the thing that's a little overwhelming. People go, how in the world? Well, we've not been doing this for a day. We've been doing this for a long time. So over 9,000 different items. You go to mobilebaycoins.com, click on the shopping button, and that's going to take you to a link to our eBay store. And all the stuff you normally get to see in the shop, you can shop from the safety of your home. We ship out Monday through Friday every day, so we can get that to you quickly.
All right. So you can do that way. You can get it delivered. You can also do curbside. But if you're doing gold and silver, they can still come in with you.
We certainly like to see people in the shop. We're observing all the proper social distancing guidelines. And I wanted to let people know that if you look this year versus last year, gold is up significantly over what it was last year. Silver is about the same as what it was this time last year. So if you've been thinking about selling some stuff but worried that the pricing wasn't optimal, don't worry about that. You're actually going to be better off than if you would have been selling this last year.
All right. Well, give people directions online and in person to come see y'all.
Yeah, online, it's mobilebaycoins.com, or you can check us out on Facebook or on Instagram. And in person, we're at 2204 Government Street in Midtown Mobile. If you need to call for curbside, 725-1590.
Thanks, Angelo.
Have a good one, Sean.
You too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins, and we continue our conversation with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. And I know you hear those stories, Sheriff, as much as the businesses that are open, the lengths they're having to go to stay open. I mean, that's a challenge.
Yeah, it's a big, big challenge, and thankfully they have that small business loan that can help them out through this crisis.
That's for sure, and keep people on the payrolls. Geronimo asks here on the text line, this is a question that I've gotten a couple times. I'm glad to have you in here when somebody asks it. Any specific crime rates that went up or down over the last couple weeks? Anything that in the trends out there that maybe are affected by people staying home?
You know, that's a good question. I get it often, and a lot of people believe that domestic violence cases would be up, and I've heard and read where some cities say that they're up. But for us in the county, domestic violence calls are down, and I think I attribute that to where you're no longer going by the corner bar and getting tanked up and then going home and getting in a fight.
Yeah, that's true. What about the drive and stuff? I mean, pulling over for DUIs and those kind of things, is that up or down, or have you heard?
I've not specifically heard that, but I think I would have heard it if it was up, and things are down.
So
the minor things are up, but most of the things are down. We did catch a burglar in a church the night before last night, and he confessed that he was hungry, but, you know, sad case, and I think we're going to see more of that, but it's still right now very minimal.
Well, that's what I was wondering is, you've described this over time, the kind of the whack-a-mole game of law enforcement. When you crack down over here, then it moves, you know, somewhere else. And I wonder, with so many people at home, it leaves less opportunity for property crimes at people's houses. And they got to go, in this case, you said they go find a church.
Yeah. And that's what happened. And, you know, I don't know if he was smart enough to think, well, maybe a church would be less likely to prosecute or whatever, you know. But I don't give people that much credit, I don't suppose.
Once again, you have more questions about the curfew. The curfew is just for the city of Mobile. It is not in effect for the county, correct?
That is correct. And for a curfew to be passed in the county, it has to be an act of the governor. The county commissioners don't have the authority. They would have to request the governor pass it. And I don't see that happening unless things were to get really, really bad. And I just don't see that.
All right. I got to ask, when we talk about crime trends here and there, and this is a strange question. There might not be an answer to, but I wonder, does this affect the drug trade in Mobile County that we've talked about so many times, the illegal narcotics? I mean, I wonder if they have less customers or more customers, or y'all seeing more bust or trends in that?
I've not heard any more complaints. I would say it affects the drug trade because you've got so many people out of work. And of course, a lot of people don't realize, but a lot of people hold jobs, do a lot of drugs. And when the jobs drop or they're not drawing money, then the money to spend on drugs is not there. And now, in the past, you'd have tightening drug markets, and that would create more violence, you know, fighting over the buyers. But I've not seen that yet either. But, you know, we should see a boost in the economy in coming weeks as unemployment checks start going out with the incentive of the additional $600. That's going to be a lot of money put out in the community.
This texter says, from a city and state perspective, you limit citizens' exposure to the virus by keeping stores closed. You basically limit the place's commerce to control the spread. Would you rather have 3 box hardware stores that are regimented, controlled, and sterilized periodically, or 30 smaller hardware stores? Okay, they're asking the question about what the governor said.
About small stores closed, yeah, 3 box stores open.
Yeah, I mean, but do you understand what that's... I mean, I know you see it, you know, what people are reacting to. They're saying, hey, what if the mom-and-pop store could live up, the small business could do all the things, whatever the protocol is, that the big box store does, and they could separate the people and they could reduce to 20% of the people in the store? Why shouldn't they be able to, you know, try to stay open?
I certainly get that question, and also, because I'll leave this to the experts, health professionals, but, you know, until we look behind, we're going to find out how much of it is exposed with people maybe shopping or something. So much is exposed in people that work in close quarters and people that worked in nursing homes and health providers and all like that. You know, I'd like to see some historical perspective on where they probably caught the virus. You know, I keep personal distance and hygiene and all like that, but I'm not really fearful when I go in a grocery store or something. And I keep my distance, and I guess you'd say I hold my breath when I walk by somebody. But
yes.
And they better not cough on maybe something else, but that's not happening that I see.
This is good. This texter says, what is going on with the challenge to the supermajority of the city council? Do you have an update on that?
Yes, I do. I'm locked and loaded. As soon as this coronavirus gets behind us, I'm going to hit it full throttle again. I'm still receiving dozens of signed petitions in the mail to the P.O. box, and I have some banners and signs made up, and we'll be going strong. But I encourage people to go to our growmobilenow.com or look us up on Facebook. But if you want to get petitions signed by your family members and friends that you're going to see anyhow, I can mail you some of the petitions that have room for 8 or 10 signatures, versus if you have to download, you can only get the front page instead of a legal size petition.
because people are going to say, I'll give you a chance to explain. They'll say, why, with all this stuff going on, would we physically have to sign something and hand it over? That's the rules, right? I mean, it's not because you want to.
You can't do it electronically. It's got petitions really are have to be hand-signed and all like that, and then they have to be verified and documented that the person is a resident of the city of Mobile.
All right, so when we get on the backside of this, which, of course, that is the big question, right? When is that? Is it next month? Is it this summer? Is it the fall?
I'm optimistic in looking and seeing what's going on in other places. I believe we're going to be coming out of it inside of a few weeks at the most.
A lot of people cheering right along with you there, and me too. Hopefully it is way sooner than it is later. All right, remind folks, too, more information online from the Sheriff's Department and the app, too. I mean, people got time. Don't tell me y'all don't have time to download stuff. You're at the house, so tell them about the app and the website.
Download our app, follow us, Team Sheriff, on Facebook, or go to our website, mobileso.com.
Very good. Follow us
on Twitter.
Very good. As always, we appreciate our time together, and you and your deputies, stay safe out there, and we'll talk again next month.
Blame to everybody else. Thank you all.
All right. Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest. And coming up next hour, it's What's Working Special Edition with Cam Marston. He is in studio and ready to go. He even has, you brought face shield here with you.
This is one of the Caligaz face shields that they've been getting a lot of attention about recently.
Yes.
And I went over to his plant yesterday and picked up a couple to have on hand. He's going to be on the show here in a little bit.
There you go. It's like, it's simple, but it's also what's needed right now. This is I'm digging this.
Yeah, it's very simple. It required him to create a die to cut this plastic shield that I'm holding. Somebody reached out to him and said, "Do you need any foam for the headboard part here?" And he said yes. He bought out all the foam from Uline, which is one of the shipping companies out there. Bought every piece he could find in the United States.
So when you can't find foam, it's Caligaz's fault.
Caligaz's fault right now. That's right. And they've got orders for 250,000 of these.
Wow.
And they just started them about 10 days ago.
It's too cool. We're going to talk more with Cam Marston. It's What's Working Special Edition starting in just a couple minutes right here on FM Talk 106.5.